Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 340 for comics originally released on February 12th, 2014. Starting us off in DC Vertigo is The Royals Masters of War No. 1. This is a 6-issue miniseries, $2.99 cover price. This was one I was really curious about. I only pre-ordered the first issue of this miniseries. And I guess I'm finding that I'm sampling more titles than I used to these days. Because I used to just in for a penny, in for a pound, whatever. But I'm getting, you know, 4 dozen comics a week. So I'm not getting particularly more choosy about stuff. But things I'm uncertain about. I'm pre-ordering only the first in many cases. And this was one of those. The concept here, I really like. You know, royalty, those families, they have powers. This is set during World War II. It's got some cool concepts. But man, this issue, it 6-issue miniseries, so you gotta figure there's a certain justification for it being written for the trade. I get that. This was mainly set up, and I didn't dislike it, but I felt like, because of the concept, I wanted to like it more than I ended up liking it. How did this one work for you?
I can definitely see what you're saying there. There was a lot of setup in it, and at first, this was a slow read, and I thought it was a little dry at first, but I really thought it picked up as it progressed. I really liked the idea, and I thought the characters really fleshed themselves out as it went through, and I liked it a lot more as the issue progressed. I thought it did a really good job of setting the table for what we're going to get, and I liked the art. I liked a lot of the dialogue. I like a lot of the writing style. I thought it was really good. I was really happy with this.
Are you familiar with this artist from other work?
No.
All right. This is Simon Colby. I don't recognize the name. I don't know what else Simon has done.
Flipping, it's like a throwback type of style, almost.
Well, it's interesting because there's an aspect of the coloring that's got kind of a muted palette to it and stuff like that, that kind of makes the images not jump off the page. But if you flip to the staple, the center of the book there.
My digital comic doesn't have a staple.
Oh, you read this digitally. Never mind. This is, I will give you actual reference. When he first, a page or two before the fire.
Okay.
So on the left there, we've got the one guy getting punched, and then the other page, scene change, it's dark, it's night.
Yeah.
Okay. There are a couple of things about some of these images. The inset panel on the second of those two pages where we get a close-up of the face, it looks almost wooden, glassy-eyed. On the other page, there's an aspect about the way the guy's rubbing his jaw, or whatever, the hand positions and whatnot. It would not surprise me in the least if I were to find out this artist is using poser to kind of block out the shots and drawing over it, or, you know what I mean?
Okay.
There's an aspect, and I'm not saying that's what he's doing. I'm not saying there's even anything wrong if that is what he's doing. Reference makes sense to line up stuff and get the shots kind of how you want them. But there was something that, with the art style, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't a plus for me either. It wasn't something that won me over. I didn't come out of this feeling like I cared enough about any of the characters to kind of regret not having pre-ordered the other issues. I came out of this just lukewarm at best. I don't think it was unreasonable for them to have spent the time setting it up. They did a fairly good job with that, but it didn't quite win me over, and I'm still debating, do I want to get future issues or not?
Yeah, I mean, like there's a big page spread that has guy flying in the center of all these Spitfire planes. I think that's a pretty impressive page.
I would agree with that, and
I think most of the pages, most of the styles aren't like that. But I think they're they seem rooted in World War II era. It's almost like if you're reading comics in the 40s, that would be kind of how they looked. You know, you feel like that would be at home there.
It's got a newsreel kind of a feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vintage film type look. I can see that.
Yeah. And I think you're right spot on about the color palette. It's very muted in places, and like there's a filter on it maybe with certain shots. Like the fire is not a bright fire. It's a very muted light, an orange that's kind of washed out in places, you know? I thought it worked for this story, for the time period, and I really like the whole idea. And I think it set the table really well for what we're going to get. And I'm probably going to definitely stick around through the whole thing. I like it. Rob Williams, I believe, is the writer. And I don't know what else he's done off the top of my head. But I had enough fun with this. Even though it started a little slow, I thought it got where it needed to go. And I gave it a 4.
Interesting. For me, it was a solid 3. Again, there was nothing wrong with it, but it didn't move the needle for me. It didn't get above just kind of, yeah, it's all right. And it may have just been, it may not have been it may have been just me. You know what I mean? It didn't click with me, and I'm not trying to suggest it was bad. I do think there's an inconsistency in, like, the art on those couple of pages I was talking about and, like, that splash page you're talking right. about. Because you're right, that was some really good stuff.
He may have taken some shortcuts in other places and spend some time, extra time on that splash page.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, there's some stuff where spending the time on the money shots or whatever, the set pieces, if you will, you know, makes sense.
Yeah.
So this is one I've still got to think about. Do I want to get the other issues or not?
Give it one more. Give it one more.
Tell you what, read the next one. Let me know what you think. And okay. Let me know if I should keep going with it or not. Because it's like I said, right there on the edge as to whether I do or not. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
She-Hulk number 1. This is volume who knows how many of She-Hulk. Charles Soule is the writer. Javier Peludo is the artist. Artist did a fine job, but the style is more of a...
It's like FF style.
Yeah, kind of like FF, exactly. Who's the artist on that? I'm blanking on the name.
Mike Allred.
It's that kind of style, with more the line work than the coloring, because I think that usually has a distinctive coloring style to it. Which, given that's, you know, the book she's just coming out of, makes sense. One of the things, and again, the art style is not a negative for me. It just wasn't a plus either. Not that this was on the risk of, gee, I'm not going to get it. I mean, it's a mainstream Marvel Universe title. I'm definitely going to get it. There were a few things about this that I felt were not telegraphed, but not surprises either. The minute she walks into the boardroom and they start talking about what a fancy conference table they have, I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work out well for that table. You know? So there was a predictability in a few places, but not in a way that bothered me. There, you know, I almost would have been disappointed if it hadn't played out that way, I guess. I loved how this was a done-in-one issue. It set up the character, the scene, the status quo for the character, the tone, the style, really well, and had some fun stuff here. This is more like how I think first issues ought to be done, much like we saw with Black Widow.
Yeah, this really strong debut issue. Charles Soule, I wish he would get off his lazy butt and write more. Because I think this is book 7 ongoing series, his 7th ongoing series that he has going on. Plus, he's still practicing law during the day. I really don't use my time effectively, because that's amazing.
Whoa, roll back. He's like a full-time lawyer as well?
Yeah, he's an actual lawyer and has a practicing law job during the day. And writes 7 ongoing series. Amazing. Amazing. Sees clients and everything. It's
uncanny to the point of almost unbelievable. I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, I listen to a lot of podcasts.
That truly amazes me, because I thought he'd just come out of the woodwork, started writing comics because, you know, it was his day job or something. And like you said, he's writing a lot and he's doing really well. But that also kind of puts an interesting spin on this title to have an actual, you know, practicing lawyer.
Yeah, writing. There are some touches there that really you can kind of see it a little bit with a bonus meeting and things like that. I think Javier Pulido's art is awesome. I really like it. I think it's a unique selling point. But I really liked Allred's art on FF, and I really like David Aja on Hawkeye, and I really like whoever is doing Superior Foes. The name escapes me.
One thing I will say about this artist is on the center of the book, where she's going up to the 18th floor.
Yeah.
There's some really unique panel layouts here, but it was done in a way where it was just crystal clear the order to follow them in, and I thought that was really, really well done.
Well, that's also, they do a good job, he does a good job in the bar. There, when She-Hulk is at the lawyer bar, mm-hmm. and in the background of the panel, while she's getting her drink at the bar, you see some activity going on in the background that is telling its own story leading up to the time when that character is introduced to She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really well done and kind of explains what she's going to do and ask when she talks to She-Hulk. So it's really, I thought that was really clever and well done, well laid out as well.
Well,
but yeah, I know exactly what you were talking about too, where she's taking that long walk up to legal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's well laid out.
Well, the other thing on that page that I loved was the summary of the fate of Tony Stark's first company, Stark Industries.
Yeah, yeah.
Soul clearly has followed comics for a long time, because I remember many of those events.
That was great, though. I mean, it just kind of went on and on and on and on.
The only thing I think Tony Stark has gone through faster than companies is different suits of armor. But it was just, it goes on, and it's accurate. It's dead on the money, as far as I can tell. So the attention to detail, I appreciated there. I thought this had a really good mix of lawyerness, superhero-ness, General She-Hulk-ness, and was a really good blend of all of those things.
Now, do you know if the Mansa Vicente, that's the colorist on this, is that the same colorist as Private Eye? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm
I thought that person was a Mansa.
Yes.
I don't know how many Mansas there are in the world, but it seems reminiscent a little bit, mm-hmm. the color palette. I think for folks who are fans of the art style of Superior Foes, Hawkeye, FF, this is right in your wheelhouse. You'll definitely love that. And I think it's got that sensibility of a Superior Foes and a Hawkeye, where it's not the superheroing so much as the off-duty type stuff, what's going on. And it's that more slice of life action that's happening. And I'm eating that stuff up, so this is tailor-made for me to like. I really thought this was a great debut. I was really impressed. I thought Charles Soule was spreading himself too thin. I didn't think this was going to be that good. I really liked it. I thought he did a great job. I hope it continues at this high level. This is a 5 for me. It's a great debut.
Now, I can totally see that. I've got to agree on all counts. This is just a really well done book. I mean, the art style is not what I would have picked, but it fits the stuff perfectly. And again, based on where she's been, other stuff they're doing, it's just, you know, it never gets in the way of the story. It allows them to do some stuff. Again, that bit in the background of those couple of panels was subtly done. It's not a let me hammer you over the head, we've got something in the background, but pay attention to this back here type crap. It was smooth. And this, again, set up the scene, set up the status quo, set up the character. It gave you everything you needed to know in a single issue as to do you follow with this book or not? Is this the kind of book you're going to like? And I think anyone who has liked She-Hulk titles in the past will certainly like this. I would be surprised if they don't, unless they were getting it strictly for like the John Byrne art or something in the past. I think this has a very promising run in front of it. And the one story I would like to see them do, and I'd like to see them do it in this book, not in the other book, I want to see a court case where She-Hulk goes up against Daredevil.
That'd be great.
And I think the tone and style we would get in this book would be fundamentally different than if it's over in Daredevil.
Yeah. I think that would be great.
It just seems like it'd be a fun story. So yeah, definite 5 out of 5. Solid, strong launch to a book. They're doing some really smart moves when they're launching things like this, Black Widow, whatever. They're coming out, putting their A game, giving you a very solid first issue, not a here's a teaser, come back for more. And I wish more first issues were like that.
Yeah, the number one up in the corner actually means it's a number one issue.
And
which is good.
Even more surprising, it's a jumping on point.
There's yeah.
Not enough of those. I've seen too many number ones. Yeah, it's technically a first issue too, but it's like, really, you know, you expect me to follow this? Moving on to our other book, we got another number one. This is The Bunker number one from Oni Press. Joshua Hale Fialkoff is the writer on this. This was, correct me if I'm wrong, done digitally first and then kind of brought into the print format?
Yes.
So I think they repurposed some of the original stuff. This is a $3.99 book, and I was getting ready to read the stuff for this week, a little pressed for time, and I'm like, hey, I just have three first issues, shouldn't be too big of a deal, go through it. And I lift this one up when I'm getting into it, it's like, this is a little thicker than I was thinking. 39 pages of story for $3.99, hell of a deal, and man, there is a lot of story in this thing.
Yeah, it's the first five digitals collected.
This is another one that I had only pre-ordered the first issue of, and it's another one where the art style, and maybe it was the coloring, there's a couple of things that I thought made it a little hard to figure out what was going on in a couple of places here and there. It wasn't a big deal, but it was one of those that I think in the hands of an artist whose style just naturally resonated with me, I'd have come out of this a bit more positive. As it was, I liked this, but it's another one I still haven't decided, do I like it enough to keep going with it? Does it make it onto, you know, my list of titles? Because I've got, I think, just that I've gotten this year, 285 titles, 180 of which are active right now. And there's still a few that'll kick in as either they start up or as issues ship this year. This had just a number of interesting characters, all of which who got their time in the script and whatnot. And again, five issues condensed into one kind of explains some of that. There's a lot going on here. Now, had you read the digital stuff?
I already read the digitals, and I enjoyed them. The original digital offerings were in landscape format. Mm-hmm. They were black and white. And this, although muted, has been recolored. Joe Infernari is the artist. And in addition to coloring his original black and white stuff, he also, in theory, has taken the landscape pages and not stacked them. Originally, they stacked them, but he is going to re-slice them and rearranged the panels and taken panels from different digital issues and pulled them up into earlier parts of the printed comic to change some of the order and to lay it out a little differently. Unfortunately for me, that lost some of the effectiveness of the landscape presentation. If you recall when we reviewed Private Eye,
mm-hmm.
Some of the landscape pages were just, I felt, breathtaking,
mm-hmm.
the way they were laid out, and one large panel and a lot going on and a lot of great motion there. This was doing the same thing, and it really, the way the page turn would work, you know, it would really hit home. Those digital page turns would really hit home because they were these landscape chunks of the story. Whereas you're getting, you know, two pages, sometimes three pages, resliced and presented on one. They lose some of their effectiveness, and you lose some of the page turn stuff that you would normally get. It still works, not as well as it did for me in the digital version.
I can totally see that, because as I was going through this, I was, one, a little overwhelmed just by the amount of content. It was more than I was expecting. They cover a lot of ground with what's happened to and going to happen to these five, six characters. And there was an aspect of it where certain things felt, I don't want to say jumpy, but like some of the scene cuts or whatever, it felt like it had been re-edited, reworked, whatever.
It had.
It didn't feel like it flowed as smoothly as I thought it would have and should have. It was still really good, but between that and there just being a lot to take in. And I'm wondering if the recoloring from black and white to color and kind of mixing kind of the grayscale with colors kind of imbued inside of that or whatever may have been some of what I was thinking with the art was just a little, not off, but made a few things a little more difficult to make out or whatnot.
Yeah, and it's really not consistent. Some of the panels are colored magnificently, and they look almost painted, beautiful, very detailed. And then some are left alone, very, you know, touched with a little piece of color, one shade here or there. And it's probably very on purpose and purposeful and art choice by the artist, and that's fine. But for me, it was a bit jumpy, like you said, and the way it slid art styles like that from panel to panel, let alone page to page,
mm-hmm.
didn't do it any favors, I didn't think.
Well, and also the very first page, a lot of the panels have the characters kind of in silhouette, not clearly defined. And again, we haven't really met them yet, so that doesn't help. So the person who sang, "This is where we dig," I was never clear exactly who that was. And since that's where they dig, that undercovers the bunker that kicks the whole story off, that seems kind of relevant to me. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it puts a potential spin on it as to, is this somebody who might have set this up, if anyone, because it would have been that person.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, Grady. I think Grady's the one that says, "This is where we dig."
Again, I can't tell.
He's kind of the leader, it seems like, in a lot of these decisions. Yeah, good, good. But there are good, these are just nitpicks for me.
Yeah.
Because I still think this is a really strong book. I think it's worth reading. I'm definitely going to continue to read this book. There are five strong characters in this. And the conceit, which is pretty much not going to be spoiled for you because it's part and parcel.
Part of the premise, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically a time capsule. They're burying a time capsule, but they find a bunker that has letters to them from their future selves warning of a coming apocalypse that they have caused. And what do they do with this information? And do they try to stop it? Do they not? You know, that's the journey. And, you know, I have a couple problems with some of the decisions they made, and I don't know if it seemed realistic, but there's a lot of good stuff here. It's a really good story. It's a really good idea. There's plenty of bang for your buck. You're getting 39 pages for $4.
That's what I counted, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really cool. Well worth your time, and I definitely am on board for the foreseeable future because I really liked it, and I gave it a 4.
I would give it a 4 too. Again, it's good quality stuff, and there's a lot of it in these pages. The question that I have for you about future issues: this was 5 digital issues, kind of remixed or whatever, into 39 print pages for $3.99. What's the page count going to be like for future issues, and what's the price point going to be like?
They're going to be 22 page. Comics for $3.99.
I am wondering if people who like this, if they run the risk of getting the next issue, thinking, well, I didn't get as much, it wasn't quite the value for my money, if this has set expectations too high for the density and amount of content you're going to get in future issues. In other words, they did a bang-up job here, but it has that almost set them up, I don't want to say for failure, but for not meeting expectations moving forward.
Well, I definitely want to see how Infernari lays out a print comic from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
You know, and not how it doesn't go back taking a digital and rejiggering it for a print. So I'm anxious to see how he does that. And it's very likely that it might be sparser. It might feel a lot sparser. I mean, just by page count alone, it's going to be sparser, but it might feel like you're getting a lot less for your money.
It'll certainly be shorter, but the other thing is, like you said, since it's geared towards this page layout, are they able to use the space more effectively, do a few things otherwise that the landscape didn't work out for or whatever? But that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. I think it's this is a great example of a sample issue, and this is one a lot of people I think should sample. You're definitely going to get your money's worth, and then you can make your own mind up. I think it's got enough here to propel me into continuing to read it, but it's definitely a fun read and worth $4.
Totally. I completely agree with that. For me, it's competing with the fact that I've got a fairly full pull list as it is.
Yeah.
If it was something where I was looking for stuff, this certainly, I think, would have made the list, as I think would Royals.
Another strong week of picks for us. You know, I had 2 4s and a 5, and you had a 3, a 4, and a 5, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was another busy week for me. I have only read about 14 of the 48 comics I got this week. We just talked about 3 of them. So I don't know. There was I tried to cherry pick stuff that I read based on what I figured we were probably going to be talking about or you'd want to talk about and stuff, because there were a lot of great things this week.
Batman 4, first and foremost in my mind, because it took a little break from the Zero Year storyline and gave us a taste of what we're going to get in Batman Eternal.
Mm-hmm.
And if I loved it, it reminded me a lot of that Detective 27.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A couple of those towards the back. Probably the Scott Snyder, what was it called? Do you remember what that was called? That Scott Snyder short story in the back of 27?
Was that...
It was a number, wasn't it?
27, I think it was, yeah.
Was it called 27?
I thought it was.
Okay.
I'd have to go check.
But anyway, it had that same art style. May have been Dustin Nguyen on art for that. But this is really cool. We've got some Harper Row. Got a nice debut by another character that I won't spoil for anyone.
Seeing that character actually got me very excited about some of this stuff. Depending how that character gets used, and I can see a couple of different ways, one or two of which I think would be a very different take on the character than might be expected, but could be a lot of fun.
And this reads like it's like a futuristic Elseworlds tale, but listening to Scott Snyder, this is taking place between, I think he said, issue 39 and 40 of Batman. So we've got a ways to go to get there, to where Batman Eternal is going to reside in the continuity, but it is going to reside in the continuity, which is cool.
So
I thought it was going to be something else.
Essentially, by the time it's a year-long series, by the time it wraps up, it will kind of dovetail into, you know, the next issue of Batman Detective, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
Fascinating. Not a bad plan.
I mean, it's logistically, they have their work cut out for them, because... You know, we saw with Villain Month, and it kind of derails. Editorial can sometimes derail all these plans and the way everything's supposed to line up. But if this is any indication, I am totally on board with Batman Eternal, and I can't wait for it.
I think it's fascinating that the Batman family has 0 years still ongoing. Now they've got Batman Eternal. The Gothopia thing's been going on. They've got a lot of big things happening there.
Yeah, that's true. And another big surprise for me on this was that James Tynion was co-writing, and he does his best work when Scott's babysitting him, and either plotting it or scripting or helping in some way and keeping his finger on it. This stuff is a lot better, and I hope that's the Tynion we get on this.
I would expect it would be.
It's really solid, very solid. And you know, some of the talent issues were very solid early on when Scott was still around. And so I think I'm very hopeful, very optimistic about this. I love this book.
A weekly book, because it's got a team of writers, sometimes, you know, devolves into written by committee, but other times really rises to a whole new level because the different writers are able to point out better ways to do things to their fellow writers, or, you know, work in tandem and build up the story versus getting a least common denominator. It's kind of the whole is more than the sum of the parts kind of a deal. And I'm hoping that's what we get with the Batman Eternal stuff. You know, we'll know over the course of the next year. But I certainly thought that was a very interesting issue, and has me a lot more interested in the Batman Eternal stuff than I was before.
The first three issues of Batman Eternal are going to be Jason Fabok on art. And then that fourth one is solicited with Dustin Nguyen. So, I don't know Jason Fabok off the top of my head. Is he the one that's did Dark Knight with Hurwitz?
I think so.
Okay, well, it's not bad. It doesn't look like this, what we got here, but it's still good. So I guess that they're going to do art teams as well.
They have.
It looks like they have two artists listed for the first four issues, and then I wonder if Fabok will jump back in after. I don't even think that's doable. I don't think you can do it 3-3 like that. I would think you'd have to have a third artist at least.
One of the techniques they used, I think it was back with 52 and stuff, was rotating artists. You take this story arc, you take this, you take that kind of a deal. With Trinity and with Countdown, it was just, okay, who's doing which issue, I believe. So there are a couple of different ways they can slice up the art chores. As long as they have people with compatible styles, then it'll flow fairly smoothly. I don't think they're going to have any major problems with that. The big challenge there is just a weekly book, year long. Can you keep up the? Can you get stuff out on time? And DC's done it three times already, so I don't think there's a major reason to doubt that it's doable. But that doesn't mean it's an easy thing to go do either. So, and they've already solicited the first 8 issues because the new round of solicitations has come up with issues 5, 6, 7, and 8 of it.
Really?
Or am I thinking Future's End? Which one started first in the solicits? Anyways, it's...
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, the new solicits are online. That's true.
Yeah.
And I haven't read those yet. But yeah, the solicits also look like there's some really cool stuff happening.
Speaking of cool stuff happening, Batman family, big events, Nightwing 28 came out. We've only got, I think, 2 more issues of that before that title goes away. And it's starting to... move towards what's going on with Forever Evil, or at least leading up to it very clearly. I enjoyed the issue. I will admit there were aspects of some of the plot stuff they did that felt a little, I don't want to say clumsy or forced, but non-subtle. How about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, like the last panel reveal, I was just flipping through it. I haven't read the whole thing yet, so I thought, that seems weird that that person is back when we saw him a while ago. But
well, that's the thing, is this is taking place before Forever Evil, so this is what leads up into it, and it seemed like this issue was, okay, based on what's going on and we need to lead up to it, boom, let's take a sharp left turn, go this way, and then have this happen. Because there was one scene in there where it's like, well, that seemed to have come out of the blue.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, those things happen.
Yeah, get there. I like the art, though. I like this Dodderman guy's art. I think it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. What else did read? Or go ahead. Walking Dead?
Walking Dead 121. Another strong issue. And I'm trying to figure out what's going to happen. I don't know, of course, and even if I could make a plausible guess, Kirkman would outsmart me. He always does. So I don't know where this is headed for issue 126, and I hope Negan dies. I want him to die. He deserves to die, and he's deserved to die for 21 issues now. He's deserved to die. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but I hope it does.
I make a point of not trying to guess where Walking Dead is going to go.
It's just an exercise of futility, isn't it?
Well, it's a no-win situation, because either you guess right, and then, well, gee, it seems obvious because I guessed it, you know? Or you guess wrong, but part of the time, Kirkman basically does, you know, doesn't zig. He zags when you expect him to zig, when you figured he would have zagged, he does the fake-out. You know,
yeah, and then he just ends up doing the obvious.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, well, nobody will expect that. It's too obvious. And, you know, he, at times, has been just a master at the craft of leading the readers by the nose in particular directions, knowing what their eye is going to be on, what they're going to expect, why they're going to expect it, and pulling the rug out from under them, sometimes by giving them exactly what they expect, but not how or why they expect it. And he's... at times, an incredibly conniving and cruel writer, both to the characters and to the readers. But that's a lot of what makes that book so brilliant, is he is very much in sync with reader expectations and in a way, and able to leverage that in a way that most writers can't or don't. I would be way more impressed with that ability if I saw it being regularly used on all of his other work. But I think, you know, when he's on his A game with Walking Dead, he's just doing brilliant stuff.
Now, how long have you been reading Walking Dead?
I got on board late. I'm going to say around issue, I'm thinking it was 35, 36-ish. I've read all of them. I got the first trade or two and then got the back issues and then was getting it off the rack at the time after that.
Well, I read a lot in trade and I didn't start buying floppies until 80s, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read everything via trade up to that point and was listening to him on, I believe he was interviewed on Nerdist podcast, and he was talking about issue 75. And he said that he got some letters about how great his book was, but that he was going to run out of ideas early on. And he said then that, well, yeah, but if I get to 75, you know, it was so far in the future that he would ever get to issue 75, I'm just going to throw some aliens in there. And, you know, haha, joke, joke. And then lo and behold, when issue 75 rolled around, he actually put some, an alien story, like a Plan 9 from Outer Space alien story in that issue.
Mm-hmm.
That is only in that issue. It's not reprinted digitally. It's not reprinted in any of the trades, omnibuses, any of the thousands of ways that all these books are repurposed. You can only get it in that issue 75. And I'm now mad on a mad scramble to grab this issue so that I can read that for myself and check that out, which I think it's very cool. It's very cool that he's never reprinted it again. And it was just for, you know, the folks that were reading the comic at the time. I think that's kind of cool.
Well,
he does a lot of fan service.
He does. That's the kind of fan, almost cruelty at times, that I love, because he's playing the game and playing it well. And in that particular issue, you had the regular story. It ends on a strong story note. Letters page followed by this backup full color, and this is what happens next. thing where he goes, yeah, it's aliens, it's all this, it's all crazy, it's all wacky, and we're going in this bold new direction. And it would be, there were actually, I think, a few people who thought, no, seriously, you're not going that way, are you? I mean, come on, that's crazy.
He got a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. And it was fun, it was entertaining, and, you know, kind of a, he could have actually gone that way. And I think it would have been a little bumpy, but I think he definitely could have made it work. I mean, he's very creative. But it would have turned it into a completely different book, and I'm glad he didn't go that way. But I thought it was a fun twist. I don't think there's any risk of him running out of ideas. There may be a little risk of him running out of steam, because he's doing a lot. Running Skybound, running Image Central, writing a couple of books, stuff with the TV show.
And he's, second TV show.
Girl. Yeah. Well, and I think he's also producing like a TV movie or something for Sci-Fi, or I forget what else. Something else was just announced. So as long as he doesn't spread himself too thin, and as long as, you know, he's able to get some serious heads down writing time and stuff on the book, he can keep this going as long as he wants.
Yeah.
And do a really good job of it, I think.
Our friend Justin Piot, who's the writer of Super, was an Unlikely Heroes Studio book. I can't remember the name.
Yeah, Unlikely Heroes, book. I believe.
And we were lukewarm on the first issue, but gave the second issue a chance because they reached out to us and liked it a lot more. And he mentioned that he missed his deadline for Diamond, so issue 4 and 5 have been canceled by Diamond. So you're not going to be able to get Super through pre-order. And the only way to get it was probably going to be Comixology. So if you've been enjoying that and, you know, we want to support our small publisher, if we can, keep an eye out on Comixology or keep an eye out on unlikelyheroesstudio.com and see what they've got going on. They are going to solicit the trade through Diamond, but look for that in the summer.
That's really disappointing. And I want to be clear what I'm disappointed about. Not that they missed the deadline. That's unfortunate, but, I mean, frankly, these things happen, particularly with smaller press books. It disappoints me that Diamond canceled the orders for that, and, you know, this is not the first time I've heard of these sorts of things, where smaller press publishers kind of get the short end of the deal, where, you know, it's tough to get into previews and really easy to get out of previews.
Unless you're Hawkeye.
Well, no, unless you're Marvel, DC, or Image, one of the big boys.
You can do whatever you want.
Because, yeah, that book may have been late, but other books that I currently have still on order through DCBS, because they have not been canceled by DCBS, which shouldn't cancel them anyways, but more importantly, have not been canceled through Diamond, include Where Is Jake Ellis, which was solicited December of 2012. Image United, number 4 and 5, solicited back in February of 2010. Hell Yeah, from also Image, December 2012. Brilliant, 5, 6, and 7 of the 6-issue miniseries, the earliest of which was December 2011. What happens is things can get canceled because they're late if you're a back-of-the-book publisher, but because of the sales agent thing, the premier publisher, whatever, it does feel like at times, and hopefully these are just oversights and whatnot, not a corporate policy or anything, but I don't know, I wonder. Marvel and Image mainly, because DC tends not to let things linger like this. They're able to have stuff out there for years. And now somebody say, oh, well, they're really canceled, they just didn't do the announcement. No. And the reason I say that is there have been times books have shipped using the orders placed on the initial order code from 2, 3, 4 years prior. And this is where it's a really unlevel playing field. And, you know, the guy is doing Super and stuff. They're putting their heart and soul into that. They're doing a great job. And to not get the benefit of the doubt, the support, whatever you want to call it or whatever, from the publisher, not the publisher, the distributor in the industry, really kind of annoys me. It frustrates me. I see Diamond's side on some of this. They can't leave everything out there forever. And some of these things do vanish into the woodwork at times. So I get that. And sometimes they sell low enough it's not worth their time. That was Claypool. Yet for many, 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 many years, they were able to afford a booth at Con, so they must have been doing okay. It's disappointing that that's happening, because if people have gotten the couple issues that have come out, are they going to want to go repay for that to get the trade? Do they want to then switch to digital? It puts it, It puts the publisher at a disadvantage. I'm going to say through no fault of their own, even realizing, yeah, they may have missed a deadline. To me, it's a kind of a, oh, well, who cares?
Yeah, he felt bad about it, but he was not blaming Diamond. You know, he was very happy that he had the opportunity to be in Diamond in the first place, mm-hmm. in previews in the first place, was very supportive of Diamond, being supportive of them when they started out. And it was, you know, they missed the deadline. It's their fault. They didn't follow the letter. You know, they tried to add a couple pages and couldn't get it done in time. So I think they were trying to bump it up from 22 to 24 pages or something, and couldn't get it done to meet the deadline. And he did promise, Justin did promise to, when the trade is solicited, to call in a preview spotlight
Great.
Clip for it.
Good.
So
good.
Well, I'm gonna call him on that when I see it in there, and so that we all don't forget about that book. And I'm gonna pick up that trade because, you know, we had problems with the first issue, but it did get better.
Yeah, I'll certainly pick up the trade. It's, again, unfortunate they've got to kind of abort to trade like that, but they're in that situation and they're making the best of it. I appreciate that too. You know, it just it irks me when the founding fathers of Image, you know, abort a book halfway through and, it's not really a big deal. Or some of these other things languish out there for years. And, you know, yet they're really hardcore sometimes on sticking to that for the smaller publishers that don't have the support staff, the production department, the marketing, the people to coordinate all of that for them.
Yeah, and it does, although we say it's better than it's ever been, you know, with Comixology and Monkey Brain and Kickstarter and everything, it's a lot easier than it's ever been for folks to get their stuff out there. It is still stacked with the mainstream retail pathways in favor of the big two.
Well, this was something that we discussed at the comic book panel, podcasting panel at Comic-Con. And Connor from iFanboy had a very different take on this than I did. I agree with you entirely that it's one of the easiest and best times right now for people to get their book out there.
Yeah.
And Connor kind of immediately shot that down with, well, that doesn't mean it'll sell.
He was in a bad mood that
day. He was in a bad mood, but he's also entirely right. Just because it's easy to get your stuff out there doesn't mean it's any good, doesn't mean it's going to sell, doesn't mean, even if it is great, that it's going to be well received. But the point is, you can get your book out there, and if your book isn't out there, it can't be well received by definition.
Yeah, right.
So it's, yeah. I'm happy that the Comixology Submit program exists, and there doesn't seem to be any huge barriers to getting carried by Comixology like there are to getting carried through Diamond. And again, there's fewer risks and costs associated to being in Comixology than there are for Diamond to carry a book physically. So I get the differences there, but that's one of the pluses of digital, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's really the only way these small publishers are going to make it, because in my travels, I've maybe hit 75, 100 comic shops. The vast majority are big two shops, and to get them, you know, to even stock a few Image beyond Walking Dead and Saga, or, you know, to stock any Dark Horse books besides a Star Wars title is rare, and it's unfortunate, and it's I don't know what the solution is to get. I mean, it's probably a cost thing. You can't put those books on the shelf if you don't feel very strongly that they're going to sell through, or that they're, even if they don't sell, that the back issue will sell. And I understand what they're doing, but I just don't like it.
Well, I think there's another component to that is, does it make sense to take a risk on a small press publisher or a small press book when there's almost no guarantee in some cases future issues are ever going to get printed or published? So why support a book if it's a first issue of a one-issue ongoing series? And it's funny because in the first weekly comic spotlight, the indie pick was Foxwood Falcons from After Hours Press. I don't know that they ever published anything ever again. And it was actually a good first issue. Not brilliant, but not bad. It was interesting. But, you know, things happen, et cetera, et cetera. Life gets in the way. And I'm not trying to pick on them or whatever. There are a ton of other publishers and other comics from around that time that just vanished into the ether.
So Diamond's been burnt over and over again by these type of small publishers. So they have these things in place then, so that it doesn't happen.
Diamond, retailers, readers, everybody, yeah.
Yeah, they want it, you know, unless you can consistently get that book out on time, they're not going to waste their time because it hurts everybody.
Yeah, and I don't know how to mitigate that risk because I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if I were publishing a comic, I would have all the art done. I would have everything ready to go to the printer now before I solicit any of it.
Yeah.
But I'm risk averse. That's just the way I tend to be. But even then, I could see sitting in Diamond's position saying, yeah, you've got all the art, but do you have the money to print it? Do you have the money for this? Can you do this? Are you not going to get hit by a car between now and the fifth issue or what have you? So I can still see, even if it's all in the can, there being problems.
So you have to, first you have to have the story, and you have to have 3 issues worth of art done. You have to have your books ready to go. You have to have printing in the bag. Then go to Diamond and say, all right, I'm ready to go. And that's a lot of investment up front before your first inkling of what's going to happen 3 months down the road.
And then convince them it'll sell, that it's worth carrying, and it'll sell enough that they should, you know, carry it. Because if it doesn't do a certain amount, it's not worth their time. Yeah, it's...
And we go through the back of previews every month for the preview spotlight, and there's tons of stuff back there with a little tiny postage stamp cover from a publisher that I didn't, you know, you've never heard of. They have one entry,
mm-hmm.
and you know, sometimes it's intriguing, but sometimes you gloss right over it. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough to rise above the chaff back there.
It's really hard with particularly the postage stamp sized cover, or at best image, you know, an image the size of like a business card or something, and what, 3 sentences or 1 really good run on sentence or something.
Exactly.
You don't have enough to sell somebody. It's I think a broken system, but
which makes it even more important that people send in clips to the preview spotlight.
Yeah. And
which is coming up.
Well, and support publishers they like.
Yeah.
Again, these guys for Super, when they come out with the trade, let's support them and stuff. They're doing good work. You know, if you've got comics you like, let us know. Send in clips to the preview spotlight. Mention them on the forums. To me, the whole point of the podcast is helping people find the books they're going to really love. And there's just a ton of stuff out there. Not all of it is for everybody, but there is something out there for everybody. It's just a matter, again, finding it and matching people up with that.
Yeah, you know, I came back to comics to read Walking Dead, added Batman, and now I'm a crazy person like you.
How many comics you get in a week? How crazy are you?
Half of you. I'm a half Mayo. I'm about 20-25 a week now. And, you know, back in 2011, I was 2 a month. So I've come a long way, baby.
Yeah. Well, again, there's a ton of stuff out there. I am, I'll admit, I'm struggling to keep up right now. I've just had a busy couple of weeks, had a few other things eaten up some time. I'm hoping to get caught back up this week. But yeah, there's, like I said, there's a lot coming out. And again, that's part of why I'm on the fence of, do I want to keep going with a few of the things I'm sampling? They could be great stuff, but still not make my list just because they're competing against, you know, time and other things I've got going on.
Yeah, against being all in on DC and Marvel.
Well, yeah.
That's got to be, that's 120 books there.
That per month? Is an excellent question.
Probably close right there.
Give me just a sec. I am going into my ongoing books, or also include miniseries.
Oh, yeah. Consider them all, because you're all in on all DC, except in some of the Vertigo, and you're all in on every Marvel book. So that includes the minis. I know I struggle with my 20 to 25 per week sometimes, and they roll over
mm-hmm.
to the next week, and I sometimes have to play catch up as they stack up and stack up and stack up. So I can't imagine keeping up with 50 plus per week. That'd be twice what I'm reading now, which I have trouble with. But we keep reviewing these gosh darn great books every week, and I keep adding these. Like She-Hulk is now on my list. Royal Masters of War is something I'm going to continue to read. Bunker was a digital, and now is a print, and hopefully it'll come out every couple of months. So hopefully it'll be slow. But I'm going to keep reading that. So all 3 of these are now part of my poll. And it's killing me. Last week was a strong week. You know, you've got me reading a Daredevil or a Deadpool book, for cripe's sake. I've never read Deadpool. Now I'm reading the Deadpool mini.
I do what I can. I estimate, by my count, I filtered my list to DC and Marvel. I filtered it down to the most recent status being either having launched, being a miniseries, or an ongoing series. So I'm not including any one-shots. I am including first issues. Those are launches. But no one-shots, no titles that have ended, that I'm sampling, or that I am not certain the fate of. such as like the Smallville season 11 stuff. And I come up with 107 for Marvel and DC.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a chunk right there.
Out of that, 50 is Marvel, and I guess that means the other 57 would be DC. And then if I filter out Marvel and DC, I guess the question is, where are the lion's share of those kind of split all the way across the board? But that's another 70 right there. Mm-hmm. Unsurprisingly, that's how the math works out. Jeez, go figure. 21 of those are Image.
So you're actually reading more Image books than I am, and I rave about Image all the time.
Yeah. That's the thing that always gets me with comic fans and the comics culture or whatever. I consider myself a DC fan, but again, I'm reading the majority of the Marvel output. I'm reading more indie books than a lot of hardcore indie fans are reading in total. Yet that seems to never count in some people's minds because, well, you know, I'm also reading DC or I'm also reading, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And again, not all these things are brilliant books or whatever, but, you know, I enjoy reading them. They're fun. I get something out of all of the different things.
Even Catwoman.
Usually. Not always. Yeah. But it's astounding me the turnover rate on this stuff because I've got, let me see what my current rollover is or whatever these days. Actually, I can just go over here. 25 launched, 1 added, 7 sampled, 14 one-shots, 115, these are, titles. Ongoing, 22 miniseries, 1 unknown. I can't be right. I gotta check one or two of these stats. No, this is what I want. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong thing. 16 launched, 1 added, 7 sampled, 8 one-shots, 145 ongoing, 17 miniseries, 1 unknown status, none dropped, 24 ended. So my net change right now, I think, is I am up 2 for the year.
I think there's room for Royal Master of War and Bunker to add to that list.
I'm already up. What do you think?
You're going to lose Wolverine and the X-Men. You're going to lose Superior Spider-Man.
I'm going to
lose Daredevil.
I'm going to replace Daredevil. I'm going to replace Wolverine and the X-Men.
Well, let's not worry about the future.
I've got a postcard here telling me in March, Marvel's going to start all new Ghost Rider, Avengers Undercover, Captain Marvel, Daredevil, Iron Patriot, Magneto, Moon Knight, Secret Avengers, Silver Surfer, Wolverine and the X-Men we mentioned, not to mention all the Point Now stuff. So, again, there's tons of stuff to be reading.
Yeah.
So, it's all good. Hopefully people can find what they're looking for, and if not, maybe we can help them.
Yeah, send in your clips and listen to Preview Spotlight. We'd love to get some more.
Yep. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week for Justice League number 28 from DC, Daredevil number 36 from Marvel, and Protectors Inc. number 4 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.